Hello, and welcome to another special Emmy edition of the Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by Joey Moser today to talk about the Lifetime Emmy contender, Patsy and Loretta, with its two stars, Megan Hilty and Jesse Mueller. Megan and Jesse, welcome to the Water Cooler.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us.
Great.
Yeah. So
it's a great temperature. Yeah, just hydrate.
Kick back and hydrate with whatever you need to hydrate with. We won't tell.
All right. Hey, no judgment here.
No judgments at all. All right. So I do want to say very quickly, I hope you both are doing well in all of these situations and the circumstances. I know it's a bit odd to be talking about, you know, Emmys and you know, acting and things like that, given the state of the world right now. But hope you both are handling and coping really well.
Thank you. Thanks for acknowledging that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's to say that it's an intense time, I think it's a gross understatement. thank you. Like Jesse said, thank you for acknowledging that.
All right. So let's move forward. So this question actually goes out to both of you. So maybe we'll start with you, Jesse. As actors, how do you find your way into your characters? How did you find who, in your case, Loretta was and how you were going to play her?
Oh, gosh. I feel like it's different every time. I think I finally learned to trust that it takes time for me. It's a process. And the process for this felt pretty quick to me. I was one of the last people to kind of join on to the project and join onto the team. But I think for me, honestly, when Megan and I got together, that was like a huge turning point, because we had met each other sort of like once socially and then sort of backstage at this gala or this gathering for business stuff, but never really gotten time to hang out. And I think for me, a huge part of it in finding who the version of Loretta sort of as a character in the film came from the chemistry with Megan and sort of through her Patsy, and just like a ton of listening. And then the team was so great. We just sort of had a deep dive and we dove in head first, and it happened fast, and everybody was so all in that it just kind of like helped you dive into the world quickly. You just kind of had to go for it. So I think that was tremendously helpful as well. Mm. You couldn't question it too much. You just had to like go big or go home.
Right. Right. So Megan, you're a shy wallflower. So tell me, how did you find the big brassy Patsy?
Well, I want to echo everything that Jesse just said. I mean, like so much of this movie and this story depended on our chemistry and our, if you believed whether or not we were friends that influenced each other in the way that Patsy and Loretta did. The tricky thing about doing something like this is these are real people, very real people, and iconic people at that. So it's, but at the same time, when you're playing a real person, you have to bring yourself to it. Otherwise it's not believable. We've both played real people before, and I think it's a real balancing act of doing as much research as you can and enveloping yourself in as many different points of view of who that person was, and then meeting that kind of deep dive investigatory work with who you are. A big part of this was saying to myself, you are not Patsy Cline. you're going to disappoint some people. Some people are going to be like, well, Patsy wouldn't sound like that, or Patsy wouldn't do that. But I had to get to a place where I really I knew that I'd done as much research as I possibly could while bringing myself to it as well, and knowing that was good enough, you know. I hope that makes sense.
I think yes. So. Yeah, it's like you have to study for the test, and then you have to put the books down and walk away and like go take the test. Right. You know?
Yeah.
And they have to, I mean, you also have to, like, this is this version of the story. Like, there could be another version of the story, but you sort of have to focus on, like, what this particular story and script is telling about these women. So I sort of want to ask a musical question. I mean, I want to know how hard it was to adapt your singing styles, because, I mean, you are obviously both in the theater. So, how much did you have to change, like, how you sang when you had to perform their music?
Oh man, I love
this. See, we love questions like this. Yeah. We nerd out on stuff like this.
We just totally geek out on like the technical aspects of, because honestly, like the vocal part, I believe is so much of it, so much, because anybody's voice is so telling about who they are and how they speak, the registers they use, like literally where your voice resonates says everything about you. So I think it's deeply important for any character, let alone two iconic women who were known for how their voices resonated with people. So it was everything to really dive deep into listening about the technical aspects about, with Patsy, I could talk to you for hours about how I believe her tone resonated with people. The reason why I believe she crossed over so many different categories from country to pop to soul, even to gossip. I mean, she covered so many different genres without even really realizing it, and because of that, her voice literally resonated with many, many more people instead of someone who would say just resonate with one type of audience. It's on this really deep technical level that I don't even think she was aware of. She clearly wasn't, because she viewed herself as a country singer and only a country singer when the rest of the world knew that she was so much more.
Yeah, I mean, I even have to say for both of you, when I was watching the film, just on a technical standpoint, like I was listening to it and I had my headphones in while I was watching it, and I was like, they don't sound like themselves. It was really freaking me out, like when I was watching.
That's cool though.
That's great.
You can't have these two women who are known for being in the theater, and I was just like, they sound nothing like their original voices. It blew my mind.
I think that's probably the highest compliment we could take for this. So thank you. That's that's quite a compliment.
Yeah, and that's cool to hear too, because honestly, doing a lot of the musical stuff was one of the first things we did in terms of the trajectory of the production. So again, it was kind of like there wasn't a ton of time, and in some ways I think that was a blessing, because you just had to go for it.
Yeah.
And our music producer Tim Lauer too was also just invaluably helpful with that, and you know, another set of ears on all of it. And Callie, our director, also has such a deep knowledge of country music and sort of what we were looking for to kind of capture in the tonalities of these two ladies. But I think what Megan said also, it's just kind of, Megan, I feel like you were tapping into, like, especially the way Patsy's voice sort of transcended genres. It was like there was an authenticity to both of their voices. They didn't sound like anybody else. Nobody else has sounded like them since, I think. Mm. And that was because Patsy wasn't a trained singer either, was she, Megan?
I mean, not in the sense that you and I know, but I could talk forever about this. So I'm sorry if I'm derailing things, but I do think she, in a way, she trained much like a classical singer would. Mm-hmm. Because if you, I encourage you all to Google Patsy Cline yodeling videos, because as I was watching those, I said, those are the same like warm-ups that I learned when I was when I thought I was going to become an opera singer. You know, like those are the those quick small intervals like that is very similar to a classically trained singer's warm up. You know, so while maybe she didn't have like formal training, what she was doing is very similar to the training of many different highly trained vocalists.
Right. I think both of them certainly had a sort of innate flexibility to their voices in terms of what you're talking about, Megan, with the sort of the yodeling or the sort of country trills. But yeah, it wasn't like these ladies went into, you know, studied voice with a teacher or anything. It was just sort of, I think they sang from their souls. I think that's why people connected to them. So yeah, as far as sort of creating the sound of the ladies in this movie, to me, it was about sort of like we were saying before, you can listen and study and try to get this intonation and this sort of shaping of this word and the sort of things that feel iconic, but then it still had to feel like it was, I still feel like it had to feel like it was connected to me. Otherwise I felt like it's going to come off inauthentically. And, totally. And that was the one thing that I was really gun shy about. Cause I was like, well, at the end of the day, like it could, I don't think I could ever do a perfect mimicry, but I if I tried to do that, I just feel like it would feel empty. It wouldn't totally. Feel like a living, breathing person. And then also honestly melding, because we all kind of know what these ladies sound like singing, but then you also have them talking and both of them had very, you know, very specific patterns in their speaking. And I think Megan, you can speak to this too, but for both of us, there's more of Loretta speaking, but also not a ton of them speaking in just like social situations or not in an interview or sort of when they're quote unquote on, but not when they're just being themselves with their, you know, with their girlfriend on a hammock in their backyard, which is what the film is more portraying. So it was that kind of extrapolation of like, okay, well, here are qualities of the sounds of their voices when they're singing. So how does that translate to their speaking voices?
Absolutely. I mean, I can certainly say that it was both something that I found difficult and somewhat freeing, because there is little to no recordings of Patsy just speaking off stage when she's not speaking to an audience. And it was pretty well documented that she was very, very careful when she spoke in front of an audience, because she was somewhat ashamed of her lack of an education. She had to drop out of school at an early age to take care of her family and support her family and really pursue her music career. But she was somewhat ashamed of that, of her lack of education, and she really, really did not want people to know, to pick that out in her speeches on stage. And so, if you listen to her speaking on stage, it's a little studied and a little careful. Not at all what I would expect for her to how she would sound. Speaking to her family and her friends, so a lot of that was guesswork based on other research, you know. So while it was difficult because of the lack of resources in that department, it was also somewhat freeing because, you know, you can't measure it against anything else.
Mm-hmm. So moving on, Megan, the Patsy in the film, you know, obviously she doesn't spare words, and she even refers to herself as an open book. Why do you think it took so long for Patsy to admit that history of abuse and that family history to Loretta after they are so close for so long?
She was also very stoic. I mean, she was, you could call her outspoken but she really just kind of spoke up to take care of people. That's really who she was. At the end of the day, she took care of people. She was forced at an early age again to take care of her family. She stepped up and went to work and took care of her mother and her family, and that carried over into every other aspect of her life. Loretta was not the only woman that she took under her wing in the music business. She was known for sitting down, taking female artists and sitting them down and saying, hey, this is how you get paid. This is how you take care of yourself. This is how you dress. This is how you, you know, in a time and a space where you would assume the opposite, that, you know, we're kind of all taught that women, especially in the arts, are all out to get each other, and we're all in ferocious competition with each other. When I have found in my life quite the opposite, all of my best and dearest friends are all women in the industry. Yeah, so I think when my opinion anyway is, I think that when people assume the parental figure or the caretaker figure, part of taking care of other people is not sometimes anyway, not sharing where you're most vulnerable. And I feel like to her, she had to keep such a brave face for so many people in order to get to where she was anyway, just by herself, that I think that by stopping, just like that monologue that Angelina Burnett, so beautifully wrote, I think exactly what she said, if she stops to cry about it, she's never going to stop. You know, the pain is way too deep. So if she stops to dwell on it, it's actually going to get in her way. And that's the last thing that she wants is for something like that to define her.
Right.
Mm. Right. Or that other line, didn't you have a line too that was like, there's nobody there to pick me up.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, I take care of everybody, being Patsy. And, you know, if I fall down, like, who's going to pick me up?
Right.
I'm the one that picks everybody else up. And that's what I think that's so human. I mean, we all try to find something we're good at. And even if we're good at being bad, then we're like, okay, cool. I'm going to be bad. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Especially if people reinforce that for you or like, yeah. I'm going to, cool. Everybody says I'm strong. I'm going to be real, real strong. And
that's who I am.
Yeah. We tend to sort of play the role we're given. And sometimes we don't. Sometimes it can be to our detriment, but I think that was one of the things that those two women learn about each other in the film, that it's like a woman doesn't have to be all one thing. You know what I mean? A woman doesn't a woman can be strong and tender and smart and beautiful and complicated. And, you know, it can be all these things. Women are human just like anybody else. They're completely multifaceted. And I think the two of those ladies in the depiction of the film were living in such a world, in many ways, we still are, where the world expects them to be defined by one thing. It puts them in this little tiny package. And if you don't fit inside the pretty package, then we don't know what to do with you. And I think a lot of the film was like, when those two ladies met each other, it was like a world opened up for them. And they just saw similarities between each other. And they also saw the things that made them different and were really able to celebrate that in each other rather than see that as a detriment to, like Megan said, like, oh my gosh, well, she's different than me. So she might take up a space in this career path that I won't be able to. It's like they celebrated each other's differences rather than seeing them as detriments.
Yeah. And Jesse, I guess going along a little bit with Clarence just asked, I'm really fascinated with the relationship between Loretta and Dew. I don't think it's in the film, but I read a quote where she said, he never hit me one time, then I didn't hit him back twice. And mm-hmm. I realized that they were married for so long, like almost for 5 decades. Can you sort of talk to me about, I think sometimes we look at that relationship maybe from like a 2020 lens, like maybe we would think like, oh, she has to leave him, or, oh, she has to do something to change you know, just the circumstances of that. Can you sort of talk to me about Loretta staying with Dew?
Well, sure. I mean, I can speak to it in terms of the film, right?
Yeah.
The thing about this, right, is we're talking about real people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Loretta Lynn is alive and well, God bless her soul. And, you know, Dew is no longer with us, but, you know, you never know what's going on between two people. That's for dang sure. So, but in terms of, and even that quote you mentioned, I've seen those clips of her saying things like that. And yeah, that's much later in her life. And mm-hmm, if you want to go find, I mean, Mandy, she has some great one-liners, especially I think as she got older and, you know, as we all gain understanding and wisdom, I think that is the way she looks back on the relationship now. I think she has said in interviews that, oh my God, you know, there's so many things that are enlightened for her now because of what she knows. But mm-hmm, when you marry somebody when you're 14, 15 years old, I would imagine, I've never done that, that's what you know. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think, you know, for her, just from like, you know, looking at the facts, that was, he was her first of so many things. You know, first boyfriend, first sexual partner, first husband, first, he was kind of her first introduction to the world in so many ways. She talks about, like in Coal Miner's Daughter, her memoir that the movie of the same name was, mm-hmm, was created after, how much, you know, he had literally, he was one of the people in their holler, in their little community, that had been outside the community. He had served in the army. So I think to her, it was like, he's seen the world, you know, he can kind of show me the world. And they had this connection. And I think they held on to that connection for so many years. I think also it was very important to her. She was a woman of faith. It was very important to her to stay married. She felt like she had made a commitment. Would she make all the same decisions now? Who knows? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is fascinating. I think, as Megan talked about, also Loretta didn't have a ton of education. So I think we often do look at things like this with a 2020 lens, or even our own lens, mm-hmm, and that was one of the things that's interesting to me about jumping inside of it. Cause I looked at a lot of it and I was like, man, how does this work out? She's so fierce, but she's also so kind of almost fragile in a lot of ways, especially at the beginning of the film, and she's quite young. There's a sweetness to her. There's an innocence to her, but there's also a bite to her. There's a fire to her. And I was like, mm-hmm, I don't understand how that all comes together. I get it when I watch interviews of her, but I was like, I don't know how to I don't know how to get into that. I don't know how to soak that up. But, you know, as time went on, I found those sort of diametrically opposed facets of her personality just so interesting, and she kind of leaned on one when she needed it and kind of felt more comfortable in the other depending on the situation. I think it probably just had so much to do with what she knew at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think she also probably didn't even know what she didn't know. And I think there was a great love between them. Mm-hmm. Joe Tippett, who played Dew in the film, you know, he and I had a lot of conversations about this, about like, so how does this happen, you know, and how do these two people stay together, and what is holding them together? And I think there was a lot of love there. They also had children very early on. So there was another facet that really was a glue, I think, that held them together. They were raising these kids. And I would venture to say too, that I think Dew Lynn was also someone that maybe didn't have a great emotional education. Let's put it that way. I think it was later on that I think even Loretta learned to kind of ask for what she needed and to learn to have that sort of more emotional maturity and intimacy with her partner.
Yeah.
So Megan, this question is for both of you, but we'll start with you, Megan. As you left this project and as you've looked back over it, what did you take away from it while you were playing, in this case, Patsy Cline?
I have to tell you that this is a really rare thing that happened. Mm-hmm. Every single aspect of working on this film was an absolute joy. And every single person that was involved was so 100% in it, you know, like it was a complete joy from beginning to end. And it was really, really sad when it ended. Everyone believed in the story that we were putting out there, and which supported, quite simply, just telling a story of two women who loved each other, and supported each other, and saying, this is interesting. We don't have to keep putting out stories of women tearing each other apart and think that that's the only thing that audiences want to see. Overall, I am so deeply proud to be a part of something that promotes that. And I made some of the dearest friends that I will never let go. Jessie's never going to get rid of me. I'm completely obsessed with her now. So, I mean, on so many different levels, this was really one of the things I'm most proud to be a part of. That was my takeaway. That what we were saying was so important, and I'm going to hold everything else to this high standard when I consider it from now on.
That's amazing. Jessie, what about you?
I mean, yeah, Megan kind of said it. I mean, just like, we would laugh so hard in the hair and makeup trailer when we were getting ready during that. Like, we couldn't wait to all get back together and hang out with each other. I mean, truly, and the collaboration that even happened just in that space, like just geeking out with our hair and makeup folks about like, oh, I saw this picture of Loretta and Patsy, and like, can we try this hairstyle on this scene? Or have you seen this one? They'd be like, no, I haven't seen that one. Everybody was so invested. And I think we also knew, because we knew how invested the fans of these two ladies are. You know what I mean? These ladies are beloved. So we really felt, I don't know, there was just a sense of having or getting to honor that as we were working on this. Like, we knew it was precious but something that we also needed to like dig into, and not so precious that like we had to hold it with white satin gloves, but it's like, I don't know. It was a total blessing. I was terrified. I didn't think I should do it. I had no idea why they wanted me to do it. I'm so glad I said, I was bullied into saying yes. No, I wasn't bullied, but because truly I was like, I guess for me personally too, like the little selfish part of it, it was really amazing for me to kind of take on something that I didn't think I could do, skills that I didn't think I had for what was required, and like step up and figure stuff out. And Megan, you were a huge part of that too, stepping onto a set, which I had been on very few, and getting to watch Megan and how she handled herself and what she was doing. And everybody was so open about answering my questions and helping me through it. Mm. Callie was instrumental in that, our director, but it just was a gift. Like Megan said, I know we have lifelong friends. We got all these people in Nashville. They're like, anytime you come to Nashville, you better call me up. You know what I mean? Because we're going to go hang. We're going to go to Tootsie's and have a drink because we didn't get to do that enough. You know what I mean?
So I have to ask, like, just a last question to close. You know, they announced that Smash was going to be an upcoming stage musical. I am trying not to geek out about how much I love that show. like, you have no idea. I just found that I have a 2014 Smash calendar still sealed in a box somewhere, so I just found it.
True story.
Yeah. Megan.
Don't unwrap it.
never. Well, I'm waiting for it to like match up to another year so I can just put it on my wall. Megan, would you consider reviving that role for the stage, and maybe, you know, bringing Jessie in as maybe you two women can like take over Broadway in a Broadway show? Like,
first of all, me and Jessie, the whole time we were on set, we were trying to brainstorm a show that we could do together on Broadway.
Yes.
There are very few two female lead.
Yeah.
So I think whatever, if we're lucky enough to get to do something like that, it has yet to been created. Possibly. Otherwise, my knowledge just doesn't run deep enough to figure out what we could do. Regarding Smash, Smash is also one of the greatest things that has ever happened to me. Both Neil Marin projects, by the way. Thank goodness for him and trusting and promoting theatrical actors and actresses in his many, many film and TV productions. Anyway, Yeah, of course I would love to continue on with my Smash life. It's one of the best things that's ever happened to me. I will say, nobody's called me about this. Like, as of now, like, nobody's asked me to
calls.
Be a part of
I'm
it.
I'm going to make so. Some calls, Megan. Make some calls. Don't worry.
Let's make that happen.
I'll play your agent in Smash the Musical.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Don't worry, I'm on it. I'll just start dialing as many people as I can because, dear God, I need to see them.
Well, Megan and Jesse, I think we're running up on the end of our time together. Thank you so much for this time. We loved the film, and this was a fantastic conversation, and best of luck to you in all things in the upcoming months.
Thank you so much for having us.
Be all well, right. Stay safe.
Yeah.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.